it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's head to the phone lines right now to be joined by a friend of the show, James Palmer. He is the co-host of Scoop City Podcast on The Athletic. He also does fantastic work for Bleacher Report. James, happy to have you pop on today.
What's up, Kern? How you been, man?
Doing fantastic. We have been asking everybody this question this week. I have to ask you to kick things off today. What is the word that you struggle with spelling that spell check has to take over? My word is convenience. I asked Patrick Mahomes this question when he came on the show a couple of days ago. He said his word is itinerary. Everybody has that word. What's yours?
Available. And I don't know why. My fingers don't do it right when I'm typing. And it just fixes it for me. But for some reason, and I'm a pretty fast typer, but for some reason, my fingers don't do available correctly. And I'm watching it on the screen, and for one reason or another, it just doesn't work for me. And I just watch it get fixed every single day that I'm going, will he be available on Sunday? And it just gets fixed.
Who is your favorite fictional football player? Mine is Tim Riggins from Friday Night Lights. Who is yours?
Well, listen, you know I'm Ohio State Buckeye, Karen. You know that. You know that's where I went to school. Do you know Keanu Reeves played a former Ohio State quarterback in two movies?
Oh, I knew of one. I didn't know the second one.
Which one did you know?
He's that in The Replacements, right?
Yes, and the same thing in Point Break with Patrick Swayze. Johnny Utah blew out my knee, lost my window. So he plays an Ohio State quarterback in two different movies. So I'll pick Point Break, though, as my favorite fictional football player. Even though he doesn't play football in it outside of a beach, he is a former bowl-winning quarterback, blew out his knee, didn't get an NFL career.
You know what? That absolutely counts. I would like to throw in this conversation Alvin Mack, another player who blew out his knee.
The program. Oh, just that's a top fiver for me right there. Yeah. Alvin Mack was absolutely outstanding running the middle of that defense.
I love the program. I'd be very happy to see that movie be a reboot. I don't know if that's one that could go to the theaters right now, but that could definitely go on Amazon Prime, and I'd watch it immediately.
I'd watch it, too. They had to take that scene out because kids started laying down on the highway. That was pretty brutal. That the original movie had the guys laying down on the highway to test their toughness, which was insane. I would say also that the program kind of just like made you just want to go out and just play football that day. There was just something about the program that was just kind of like, did they do it a little more real than everybody else? It was a great film.
So we were just talking about this right before you popped on. I was asked this question on an interview and I hadn't thought about it. When it comes to Sunday Night Football, are you more encouraged by the offense scoring 30 points or by the defense who held the Lions to 17 points?
I think it's by the defense, in all honesty, because that's where we have more question marks, and we've seen the way this offense has now worked with Xavier Worthy, which is what they wanted to do right from the start, but obviously the injury happens, and since he returned, they got, what, 30, 28, and 27 points. So that we've seen that, and we know what the secondary of the Lions was. But this was a Lions offense that we knew coming in, it was when they took the opening toss and said, hey, we want the ball, it was, okay, we want to run the football against a team that has struggled to stop the run. We had the two-headed monster, you know, with Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery. And they had a great opening drive, and they did some good things early. But the defense buckled down, man, and really played well against a Lions offense that had everybody. And so, to me, I have question marks on the defensive side of the ball, and I think playing the Lions the way they played them, I think that was a really good performance to me as this defense, I think, is going to grow as the season goes on, and I'm not saying anything that nobody's ever seen before with the Spags defense, but I do think this group is going to grow. They have some younger guys up front that they're going to need to have, you know, really go by leaps and bounds as this year goes on and be playing different football by December, but I think this was a really good step early on for that defense.
I argued the offense because I've seen their offense really improve at almost every single facet of it. Their quarterback is playing very consistent football, but that's always the case. Their running game, I think, has improved over the first 6 weeks of the season. That offensive line has certainly improved as well. You're getting great play from Travis Kelce, who had a very, I would say, weird first three games with the Andy Reid, the helmet throw, all of those things, and a wide receiver room that is really filled in and is now about to get their best wide receiver back. I've been very encouraged by this offense basically since halftime of Sunday Night Football against the Giants.
Yeah, listen, you asked me to pick one of the two. I'd say as an entire unit, I was impressed with the defense considering what they were going against. In terms of a position group that I'm most impressed with, to me, I think it's the offensive line. I think the offensive line coming together, and it's helped the run game. It's helped Patrick operate under center in the run game a little bit more than we've seen in the past. It helps him on the play action. It helps him on the bootlegs. And we know with Rashid coming back, like a lot of these shallow crosses that he's just brilliant at. And it's a feel thing, and he's just so good. And some of those plays take a little bit of time. And I think the offensive line allowing Patrick to be able to have some of these concepts that they want to run now that they're getting all of their pass catchers back, I think allows them to run the offense the way they want. And I think we had some question marks early on, right? We're like, there were thoughts that like Trey Smith wasn't playing up to the level that they know he can play at and the contract that he has. And we all know Creed's outstanding, but then you had another question at the other guard spot. And then, you know, the tackles, you're going, I don't know if this is kind of up and down. It was all starting to kind of come together, even though Josh Sims isn't there in that game Sunday night, you're still seeing this offensive line come together. And I think if that happens, and it looks like it's headed in that direction, I think this offense with Patrick getting time has a whole lot of different things that they can do.
Right now, we're talking to James Palmer, going through some of the top storylines right now with the Kansas City Chiefs. You are as plugged into Kansas City as any national reporter is. What are you hearing about Josh Simmons? What is sort of the feel around him as he is currently away from the team?
I'll just say, very few people knew what was going on, to my understanding, prior to Sunday. And then more people started finding out. And when you're hearing very little information coming out of the organization, oftentimes I also let that like kind of play itself out. And I think when you hear Andy say, I'm going to, you know, defer to Brett Veach, and you hear Patrick not really answer questions about him, I think, you start to just kind of go, well, let's just see what the team says next. Obviously, we're all digging and we're all asking questions. All of us, we wouldn't be doing our jobs if we weren't reporters, but I think there's a respect thing there. But I just think there's just not a lot of information. To be completely frank, there isn't. Until we get some, I think that's where it stands right now.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think my, at least, confusion in all of this has just been this. I don't know what it is. I have absolutely no clue, and I've tried to avoid speculation because I just don't think that's fair, and you and I both know somebody clips it or says they heard on the radio, like, wait, no, that's not at all what I said. What I'm confused about is this. I just don't know why, if it was a personal reason or a family reason, why either his agent doesn't release a statement or the Chiefs just jointly release a statement. Hey, Josh Simmons is away from the team right now dealing with a family matter. When Josh feels ready to talk about it, he'll give you an update. Like, that seems like something that's very simple that would have basically ended any rumor or people trying to guess what it is. I just don't know why they didn't put this fire out from the very, very beginning.
Yeah, I think that's a question more apt for somebody that studied PR in college and not me. But I agree with you. I think trying to figure out the best way to get as much information out as you're allowed to or willing to or can regarding the situation is oftentimes the approach with a lot of these things. But again, sometimes if you don't hear something, it's you don't have a lot and you as an organization don't want to speculate. So I'm going to kind of let it kind of play out a little bit. Obviously, we're all trying to figure out, you know, within reason and hope everything's okay. But at the same time, I think we just kind of see what the Chiefs do next.
I really want to make this a point in every person that we talk to this week. I think Jalen Moore just deserves a lot of credit. You follow this league. You talk to teams. You talk to players. I mean, I think a lot of players would have asked to just be on the inactive list on Sunday Night Football. He had a kid earlier in the day. You haven't been getting run with the ones. You haven't been practicing with the ones. You maybe were told in free agency one thing. A draft ended up happening, and it changed plans. I think it certainly would have been understandable for him to stay with his family on Sunday, for him to show up, play as well as he's played, keep his head down, and do the work. I think he deserves a lot of credit for how he's been a pro in the face of everything that's happened in the last 6 months.
100%. And I think he went from a good organization to another good organization. I think the time he spent at his previous stop plays a part in this, in the way that they do business, in the way that they run their football operation. And I think it's a credit to him for sure. And I think also it's we should be looking at this going, man, everybody was going, whoa, Brett Veach paid a lot of money here. Well, right now everybody's going around the league, is there anybody way we can get some offensive line help right now? Like, there are teams trying to get some depth. I mean, there's just not a lot of good offensive linemen around. There's teams that are very thin. I mean, you know, the Chargers are playing like their fifth, sixth offensive tackles, like, right now. And so credit to everyone involved for you know, maybe having one thought process when the deal was made, to pivoting and getting who many believe was maybe the most athletic tackle in the draft at the bottom of the first rounds. And he ends up playing really, really well while he's out there. And that changes things, and he wins the job. But I think, you know, he's been around long enough to go, this league changes week to week, and anything could happen. And you got to make the most of your opportunities. You're getting a chance to protect Patrick Mahomes. And he did a really, really good job of it. And so now, considering a very unique situation that they're in right now with Josh Simmons, I think Brett Veach is looking pretty smart, and he's looking like a pretty good fill-in right now.
Right now, we're going through some of the top storylines with James Palmer of Bleacher Report. I asked Mitch Holthus earlier this week what it means for the Chiefs to get back Rashee Rice, and he said this is like adding Deebo Samuel to an offense. We mentioned it a little bit earlier, just kind of talking about the Chiefs offense and how they're kind of rounding into form. I don't know if I would maybe go like Rashee Rice is the top 10, top 15 receiver in the league, but I think there's a group of like 30 to 35 wide receivers that are clear game-changing, impacting kind of players. And the fact that an offense that we think is trending up right now, the fact that they're getting a player like that at this time, I mean, that's one of the biggest additions that any team is going to have in the National Football League from now until the end of the season.
It's a big deal. I'd actually go a step further than Deebo, because very few years Debo's been the focal point of the offense, right? Like, he really hasn't been the focal point of an offense for some time. Rashee is Patrick's favorite target right now, I think. I mean, I think he's the focal point of the offense. I mean, obviously, he still loves throwing the ball to Travis, but we understand where he's at now in his career and the way this offense is operating with Rashee as the focal point, essentially, of it. I'll just tell you this. Very few times do you kind of talk to people in buildings and understand how excited they are for a player to come back. And this is, like, next level. Like, there are people in that building that are just over the moon to get Rashee back. And I think it's because they know the amount of attention he was going to get last year. Go look at his targets in four games before he got hurt, Carrington? I think it was something like that. And the amount of times Patrick looked his way and what they wanted to do with him and the growth they saw. You said he's not a top 10 receiver. They truly believe he's a top 10 receiver. That's the way the Chiefs think about him in terms of the way he can change a game. The yards after the catch, he's like a running back with the ball in his hand. So maybe that's where Mitch was going with the type of player that he can be. Because Deebo kind of is that same vein. But, like, he can take short gains and make them explosive plays. And this is a league right now that is starving for explosive plays. Outside of the Seahawks, it seems like, nobody can get really, really downfield. And now this group has the speed to stretch it. They make you cover every single blade of grass. I know it sounds cliche, but horizontally with the way Worthy.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
He plays, and now you're just stretched out. And I think Rashee Rice is kind of the linchpin that holds it all together in the way they want it to work and operate at its highest level. And so I do think this is a really big deal for an offense and a team that I think there's 13 teams with four or five wins. The Chiefs are not one of them, but I think most people would say the Chiefs are in a better spot than if not, you know, the vast majority, if not all, of those 13 teams.
I was just going to ask you that this is one of the rare times that I think you could say there's a team that is 3-3, and that you could argue that right now they're the best team in the National Football League. They're also currently have the 8th best record of teams in the AFC and are 3rd in their own division. I don't know if you've ever been able to say that at any point in the National Football League.
I think because right now you're seeing some of these teams at the top that you have legitimate questions. I mean, we could look at the AFC. Like, I think the Colts are playing outstanding football. It's one of the most efficient offenses we see in the league right now. It might be the most efficient offense we see. And I think everybody's going, well, like, that's Daniel Jones, right? Like, they still, even though DJ's playing at a really high level and they're really, really, you know, they're just a great group of skill guys that know what they're doing. And Tyler Warren's been awesome. You still go like, well, that's Daniel Jones. It's not Patrick Mahomes running it. And you see the Bills are having, for the second consecutive year now, like issues attacking teams from the boundary and don't have an outside receiver, and that's really impacting their offense. And the defense has, you know, some injuries they're dealing with. Like, I do think it is true because you also have a track record that's just in your mind. You have Andy Reid. You have Steve Spagnuolo. You have Patrick Mahomes. You still have all these pieces that have made it, you know, so consistent of a winning organization that gets better as seasons go on. You can't just forget that, even though every roster is different with every year and teams change. I get that. But a lot of these other teams have questions. I mean, the Chargers came out like gangbusters, and I mentioned, like, their entire backfield goes down. Most of their offensive line goes down. They lose Khalil Mack. Like, everybody has, I think, a question mark next to them, including the defending Super Bowl champs. I just think that question mark's just a little smaller. And we don't question it as much with Kansas City.
Are you a believer in the Indianapolis Colts?
You know what? I'll say this. I want to be, because it's kind of fun. I mean, I'm not going to lie. It's kind of fun the way they play football. It's just people misuse the word balance, I think, with them. And you just go, oh, well, they're so balanced. They run the ball so well. I mean, Jonathan Taylor's leading the NFL in rushing. He's outstanding in everything he does. He's maybe one of the most underrated players over the last several years in this league. But they all know what they're supposed to do. I think it's such a great team to watch if you love everybody knowing their role. Like, Michael Pittman knows what he does. Josh Downs knows what he does. Tyler Warren is one of the most entertaining players to watch in football. And I think we love a redemption story. Like, we love that Daniel Jones is bouncing back. And I was, you know, guys still are rooting for him that played with him in New York. Saquon Barkley and Sterling Shepard, I was talking to him the other day. Like, they're all still pulling for him. I think this is somewhat legit. I really do. I think they are legit. And I think what we're seeing also is that Shane Steichen's a really good play caller. He was outstanding in Philadelphia before he got this head coaching job. He just didn't have anybody that could run the system. And now we're seeing, I think, a really balanced, efficient team that is, I think some people outside of Indy might be rooting for, just because it's a really great story for a lot of guys involved.
James, I'll get you out of here with two things. The first thing is, who do you think right now is the best team in the NFC? Because you just mentioned the question marks that are currently around the National Football League. You look at the NFC, I really like the way the Tampa Bay has started. They don't have a healthy wide receiver, it feels like, right now. The Lions are super banged up when it comes to their secondary. The Eagles just haven't felt right the entire season. Green Bay, I loved Green Bay to kick off the season. They lost to the Browns and then tied the Dallas Cowboys. There's so much uncertainty in the NFC right now. How are you handicapping in this thing? Who do you think is the best team right now?
Well, I love that you mentioned Tampa and what Baker's doing, because, I mean, not only is he playing, you know, without a future Hall of Famer and Mike Evans most of this season, the running mate of him and Chris Godwin has barely played, who's a Pro Bowl receiver as well. And then you have your rookie receiver carrying your entire passing game, and Emeka Buku's playing great, and then he's out. But nobody even talks about, like, Bucky Irving's been out. The entire offensive line returned from last year. They haven't played the way they played together last year for a single game. They've been shuffled around, and there's been injuries in front of Baker galore. I mean, most of those guys have missed multiple games this year. And if they did play every game, they'd probably play in multiple positions. So that's really what's going on in Tampa. So it's really impressive what they've been able to do and what Baker's been able to do. I'll bring up a team that you didn't mention. I think Seattle's really, really good. And mainly because they're good in the trenches, which to me is a significant part of being a great team. Their offensive line's playing really well. Cross is probably playing the best football of his career. Their interior three on their D-line might be as good as any interior three in all of football. Jaxon Smith-Njigba is right now playing like the best receiver out there. And Sam Darnold looks more comfortable in this system than he did playing with Kevin O'Connell in Minnesota last year. And so what Clint Kubiak's doing with that group and the way that they're designing that offense and the way that they're playing football right now on both sides, I think Seattle might be one of the best teams in football. Secondary is a little bit of a question. We'll see what happens at the trade deadline, if they can add somebody and get things together. But I actually really like Seattle. They're a team that's been fun to watch, and they're pretty talented in the trenches. And to me, that usually carries you through ups and downs of the season.
I'm not sure if you have an MVP vote or not. We obviously got a long way to go in this thing, and I'm sure we'll talk about it between now and then. The point that I made whenever Mahomes became the favorite is I think the tie is going to go to Baker. I think we see this happen in the NBA with Jokic, for example. If it was a tie, because Jokic has won a couple, Joel Embiid wins it. If there's a tie, we're going to give it to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I think the fact that Mahomes has won so many other things, and Baker is so likable and has such a very likable story. Like, it is the ultimate character arc. Number one overall pick, fell flat on his face, rebuilt himself, and turned himself into an MVP. I think if it is close in any way between Mahomes and Baker, then Baker's going to be the NFL MVP this season.
I can see that for sure. I think your thinking is definitely warranted, because I think it's part of the reason why Josh won the MVP last year over Lamar. Because I think if you look at Lamar Jackson's season, and I know people in Kansas City are like, you know, he can't win in the postseason, and you know, he can't beat Mahomes. Totally get it. It's a regular season award. And Lamar definitely put up the numbers to win another MVP last year. And it felt a little bit of what you're describing as, it's really close. Josh has never won one. He's always played great. Let's give it to him. It kind of had a little bit of the vibe to it with those two guys. It's been a minute since Pat won MVP, right? Like, I don't know. Like, if it is close, I do think that the idea of that story with Baker makes sense. I'll throw a monkey wrench in there. And I know this is a quarterback award. You know who I would give the MVP to right now? I give it to Bijan Robinson. Bijan Robinson is incredible right now. I think he's the best offensive player in football. He runs routes like a receiver. He's now finally getting used the way Arthur Smith, sadly he's not there anymore, but drafted him to do. It just took 3 years for Bijan to kind of learn it all. But the way that he plays the position, the offense runs entirely through him. Everybody knows he's getting the ball, and he's literally their second option after Drake London in the passing game. He plays their F, Karen. Like, he plays their slot on third down. Like, he is an unbelievable football player. I know nobody's won it since Adrian Peterson in 2012 as a non-quarterback, but I'd like to see maybe a non-quarterback get into the mix a little bit.
James, I'll get you out of here with this. I know you're a Big Ten guy. While you and I were talking, Indiana just agreed to a contract extension with their head coach. 8 years, $92.8 million for Kurt Cignetti to continue to be the head coach at Indiana. That is a fantastic contract.
I think it's outstanding, and I think there's a contract. You know, there's a vacancy within the Big Ten, and I think his name was on a list to potentially land in Happy Valley, and I think Indiana jumped at the chance to make sure they lock up, I think, somebody who's a really, really good coach. I think everybody's trying to chase down my Buckeyes right now, who are on fire, and I just think we all could wish that we could get Jeremiah Smith into the NFL next year, but we still have another year of college football for him, sadly. But, yeah, I think he's a great coach. I really do. And I think it's really awesome. It's one of the better stories in college football right now and what they're able to do there in Indiana.
That is James Palmer. He is with Scoop City Podcast, courtesy of The Athletic. He also does fantastic work for Bleacher Report. He's one of our favorite guests. James, I look forward to catching up with you in a month. The Chiefs have a stretch of at Buffalo, at Denver, Indianapolis, and Thanksgiving against the Cowboys. So I'm sure we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, it sounds good. I think if Denver takes care of business, like if they can, they could be 8-2 rolling into that game against Kansas City, and that could be a really fun one.
Absolutely. That's James Palmer joining us on the show. Appreciate you, James.
Yep, no problem.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know why it's not
outside of Cleveland.
You know,
think of the Browns, outside of
Browns. You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.